Welcome to the Hormone Lifestyle Zone. I'm your host, Meg Ricci, and this podcast series is about demystifying hormonal issues and struggles facing so many women today. And today we're going to explore the world of infertility. This is a topic that's very dear to my heart. I've been working with women in this area for over two decades, and I really hesitate to refer to it as infertility because I don't believe women are infertile. I believe there are a variety of factors keeping many women from having a child or holding a pregnancy to full term. And that goes beyond the age of a woman and the quality of her eggs. And I'm seeing this more and more in women in their 20s and 30s that are struggling with unexplained infertility. And so does my next guest. And the title of today's episode, A Deep Dive into Unexplained Infertility, Miscarriages, Failed IVFs, with Dr. Jonathan Scheer. So Dr. Scheer is a New York City-based fertility specialist. This wonderful physician has helped women and couples for over four decades bring healthy babies into this world. So let me give you a little background about Dr. Jonathan Scheer. He specializes in high-risk pregnancies and is in the investigation and treatment of couples who experience recurrent pregnancy losses or have repeatedly failed IVF and unexplained infertility. Dr. Scheer is a fellow of both the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists in London, England, and the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. He was awarded a doctorate for his research on the role of prostaglandins in spontaneous and induced labor, and has authored numerous scientific publications in peer-reviewed medical journals, and has contributed to chapters in medical textbooks. His residence has included training at the Fane Groote Schuur Hospital, University of Cape Town, South Africa, and at the King's College in London, England. He has taught students and residents at the University of Cape Town Medical School and is a full-time professor at Mount Sinai Medical School in New York City. He's also the author of two books, Everything You Need to Know About Pregnancy and Preventing Miscarriages, The Good News. He has also been interested in mind-body medicine and has recently visited traditional hospitals and Chinese maternity hospitals with the Royal College of Gynecologists in Beijing and has interviewed with scientific and general media. And he has a practice on Park Avenue in New York City and is currently associate clinical professor at Mount Sinai School of Medicine in New York City. Jonathan, thank you so much for joining me in the Hormone Lifestyle Zone. We had some technical difficulties, but we finally got you on this morning.
Sure, pleasure. Thank you for that grand introduction.
So, Jonathan, I think you had sent me a list of wonderful questions, but I really would like to hear your take on why we're, and this is a broad question, why are we seeing so much more and more unexplained infertility? Are you seeing more of that in your practice over the years?
Yeah. Yes. Just to be clear, the practice is largely involved with recurrent pregnancy loss and repeated failed IVF procedures, as
right.
you mentioned.
Yes.
What is happening now is that more and more. Well, firstly, there are a number of reasons. In the urban centers, women are starting to their families at a much later age. Mm-hmm. That's the one thing. And by later, I don't mean over 40. I mean in the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be one contributing factor. And also, I think there's more and more knowledge available, and there are more and more treatment modalities that are being done now. And it's being demystified, and people are hearing from their doctors or hearing from friends that there are things available that they can do. And so I think they're coming forward, and you seeing them and I'm seeing them mm-hmm. because people hear your name and they come forward to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the main thing, because we can do more about unexplained fertility, unexplained pregnancy loss, unexplained failed IVF now than we could before.
Mm-hmm. So as you
so
know,
people come forward now. Sorry. Yeah.
Yes. And, you know, and I refer people to you, and I've had when I was in New York, when I practiced for 20 years, because I would, you know, I too, a lot of people, unexplained infertility, succession of failed IVFs, miscarriages. And there was a lot that I could do and unfold. And a lot of that being looking at leaky gut and inflammation. And I know we're going to talk about that more.
Yes.
You know, for example, there was from the Journal of Translational Medicine in 2018, there's a study that women with repeated miscarriages, they found a link of leaky gut might occur and allow passage into circulation of immune triggers, potentially able to elicit endometrial innate immune response and thus to contribute to miscarriage pathogens. Diagnosis and treatment of intestinal disorders underlying leaky gut might improve endometrial environment and pregnancy outcome.
Right.
So, you know.
Yeah, that's quite right. I mean, there's a lot more out there. And my feeling is this, that miscarriages and failed IVFs don't always have to happen. There are treatments available, and unexplained infertility, the term should only be used when all the relevant testing has been done.
Right.
If it hasn't been done at all, or there's only been partial testing, it's not unexplained. It's got to be looked at in a lot of different ways and a lot of different tests and the history and so on and so forth. So the word unexplained infertility is only unexplained when the patients haven't been investigated. This is the problem.
This is the problem because, is why I wanted you on the show. And what I'm seeing, so I've been down in Charleston for 5 years, and I see a lot of women where there's something amiss, something's askew, and the traditional, it sounds interesting, the traditional or the conventional way of proceeding with women with, you know, infertility is going into IVF, but nobody is exploring and examining these areas in the way that you do. And I brought this up, you know, you and I, we did I had you on my radio show about 7 years ago, and we explored this. And I thought during this time, I would be seeing more, you know, reproductive endocrinologists doing a deeper exploration into why, but they're not.
Yes.
So I'd like you to talk about that.
This is a bit of a problem. I think the reason is that a lot of reproductive immunologists haven't been exposed to immune testing. That to me is a big area. However, just before I enlarge on that, I just want to say that I work up to the immune testing. I don't just do the immune testing. I don't jump into it. I first work up and do the basic workups. And,
I know you
and
do.
There are lots,
yeah.
There are new things that happen in the basic area because I see the type of patients I see, particularly with failed IVF, are patients who have already seen excellent REs, and usually it's such a mission when they fail IVF that they've seen more than one doctor and been to more than one hospital and they've been to more than one clinic, and then I see them, when I talk to them, I first make sure that I understand their history because they're long and complicated. And when you hear these histories over and over again, you get a feel of what they need even before you've done any testing. So, you know, it's very important to take extremely detailed histories. And I think that because reproductive immunology is a relatively new area of investigation, it's just maybe 20, 22, 23 years old, there hasn't been enough exposure. Not every medical school has courses in reproductive immunology, and this is the problem. And what I see is the reproductive endocrinologists, by and large, keep trying and just vary their medical treatments, a little bit more of this, a little bit more of that. And you need to go further, because especially today, mm-hmm. especially today where patients are paying for pre-PGS, pre-implantation genetic screening, where the embryos are tested and we know that they're normal when they transferred. And that hasn't shifted the dial much. It hasn't improved. The feeling was, well, this is the answer. Now everyone will succeed. And it's not so. And yet they haven't embraced immunology, which in these difficult cases is a big chunk of it. And I think a lot of testing should be done even before they undergo IVF, or certainly mm-hmm. after one IVF failure.
So what are you seeing? What are you seeing as being the issues from an immunological perspective? Or what are you seeing that's contributing to many of these women that you're working with that other reproductive endocrinologists are missing?
Well,
not testing for?
There's a lot of immune tests that we do, and mm-hmm. we vary them depending on the patient's history. Mm-hmm. The clinical application of immunology is relatively new, and it's not something that has yet been accepted. And what I want to say is this, that on analyzing our results, and I've been doing this for many years mm-hmm. now, and the immunology too, which is relatively new for many years, we get on the patients we see who've repetitively failed IVF. Mm-hmm. And they, in the old days, when people failed IVF or had recurrent miscarriages, that was attributed, everything's chromosomal. You know, there are not enough chromosomes in the embryo, or they're abnormal, or they're mm-hmm. missing. But that can't be done anymore to the same extent. And we are showing they've already seen the reproductive endocrinologists, we are showing a good success rate with our treatments. And the word of mouth spreads. And that's why the enormous number of women who seek, they say to their IVF doctors after 2-3 failures, look, isn't there anything else? And the answer they often get is, oh, not really. And a lot of it is just, you know, experimental witchcraft, not proven. And with that approach, a generation or two of women are being missed who could have babies, because we've seen the success rate. We have seen the success rate beyond the IVF success rate. Remember, they've already failed with the RE, and we investigate them generally and immunologically, and we see success.
So I have a question.
And the same thing applies to recurrent pregnancy loss. Uh-huh. There's a lot more. Sorry. Okay, you talk, because there's a lot more with the recurrent pregnancy loss as well. Instead of trying again.
Oh yeah, and I guess what I'm taking a step back and I'm looking at, we're seeing these women or couples with immunological issues that you are exploring.
Right.
But what is triggering this? I guess what I want to get into, what are these immunological things that are being triggered? Why? I actually referred someone to you who had a child, and then having the second child, she had a succession of miscarriages and other things going on. She, and from my perspective, when we didn't continue to work together, she went to see you because she's in New York, but had a lot of gut and gastrointestinal issues going on, an incredible amount of stress. So, you know, are a lot of these immune issues, are they a reflection of underlying inflammatory triggers going on? That's
absolutely.
You know, and that's really what I think is part of the picture that I'm seeing, and I want to go, because
you're absolutely right. I mean, inflammation doesn't mean that the person has a fever and they're red in the face and they've got an ice pack on their head. Inflammation medically and immunologically means the presence of inflammatory antibodies or cytokines, which are more complex antibodies, but they're still antibodies. And inflammation is a cause of actually every disease from cancer to the common cold, including pregnancy problems, because inflammation will attack the implanting embryo. So they either don't get pregnant or they miscarry or they don't take home a baby. And a lot of diseases, they act through inflammation. And they act through inflammation. And when we do the immune tests, a lot of the immune factors are causing inflammation. And, you know, I know you're very interested. I mean, stress itself is believed to be a cause of inflammation. And that's why, even though I do very Western medicine, my actual investigation and treatment is only Western medicine, British and American tests. But I do approach the mind body, and we also talk about anxiety and stress, because that also results in inflammation and lifestyle factors and so on. But the testing I do is strictly British American testing, and but if you want to talk about inflammation, you've got to include stress and emotional aspects.
Well, yes, and I guess what
I just want to say that I've got a friend, Dr. Sammy David. He does infertility. Sammy doesn't do IVF. Over the years, I've spoken to him and we've commented, and this happens with patients coming to me as well. They make an appointment and they wait for their appointment. And when they arrive, they're pregnant, or else they've cancelled their appointment because they've conceived. I mean, this is the old story. Someone adopts and then they get spontaneously pregnant themselves. So there's a lot in that. I learned a lot about this when I visited traditional hospitals in China and so on. And also there's a doctor called Petra Ark, who was at McMaster in Canada, she's now in Hamburg, who does a lot of basic research into immunology and the effects of stress on immunologic reactions. So that's very important. But, I do a lot of strictly Western immune investigations. So, it just hasn't been, it's just not out there.
Well, I guess what I want to ask you is, and this is what I see a lot, are these immunological triggers or responses that are occurring in women being driven by a leaky gut? Is it being driven? Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. So if we...
That's one aspect,
that's what I wanted to bring up, because what I see in working with women, for me, it's not just about getting these women pregnant. It's making sure that they have healthy babies.
Right.
And I bring this up because I think it's an important part. A lot of times people think, well, if I take this drug or if I do this, then I'll be able to get pregnant. Well, we have to take a look at what is the driver underneath all of this. And I believe, you know, and you're going to explore what you do, but I think what I'm trying to drive home is I think a lot of these issues are also involving leaky gut, environmental factors, standard American diet.
Sure.
So, go on.
They trigger immune responses.
Yes.
But it's not only immunology. I mean, you see, the REs, I remember about 20 years ago, but really in the past 8-10 years, a lot of IVF clinics are using, the patients are paying for and using euploid, or another word for chromosomally normal embryos from screening.
Right.
And this didn't, as I said, Ellis, didn't really, at first I said, well, this is it. Everybody's going to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't happen. And it's where the baby's going, it's environment. And if there's inflammation, that's a big trigger for immune responses or for not succeeding. And I just have to say that people must realize that when they have fertility treatment, pregnancy is not the success. The success is it's an outcome success. That success is taking the baby home, not just getting pregnant.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because people get pregnant all the time and they don't even know it half the time.
Yes.
So recurrent miscarriage, that's why, the instance of recurrent miscarriage, about 1 in 10 women, about 15 to 20% of women have a clinical miscarriage.
Mm-hmm.
But about 20%, an equal number, never know they were pregnant because they might not have any symptoms of missed their period yet and the fertilized embryo hasn't implanted. But you're quite right about the leaky gut. I mean, these things are important, and there's a whole new era of microbiomes, which is to deal with bacteria in our bodies.
Yes, vaginal, and I know you're, the gut and the vaginal microbiome. But
very important.
But what I think is really, what I love about the work you do, and I sat on an initial intake with a client years ago, you really do take that deep dive. So you look at clotting factor issues and a lot of a variety of things. So can you walk through what you have seen in clinically with women so they can get a better understanding of what you're treating that helps them along in holding a pregnancy that may not involve or may involve IVF?
Okay. So let me tell you, we'll take recurrent miscarriage or repeated failed IVF. Let me tell you how I approach it.
Yes.
Perfect. Firstly, when these couples arrive, mm-hmm. and it's always nice if the husband comes along as well because he's also involved. And when I've seen them, I ask them first to, when they make the appointment, to make sure we get all their past records of all the doctors they've seen for fertility or being treated for miscarriage or IVF to get me those records. And often we get hundreds of pages transmitted to us. It's amazing, never under 200. So you can see what a mission it is to have a baby. And it's gut-wrenching, and that's why I've always been interested in this. So this is what they come in, and they sit down, and I introduce myself and put them at ease, and then I say, the first thing I want to do before I take history is find out why you came to see me. That's very important. And, start when you and your partner first met and lived together or got married. And, for example, you tried for 6 months and then you went to a gynecologist and had one or two tests, and then they thought you should go to a fertility doctor, and what the fertility doctor did. Did you have, whether they were treated with just trying with a temperature chart at first, or whether they were given drugs like Clomid and Letrozole to induce ovulation, and whether they went for IVF. Tell us about the retrievals. They volunteered quite readily. They have such traumatic stress syndrome that they remember the dates and the times. Of everything that's happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so usually this takes about 40 minutes, but it's very important when you do something, you do it right, you pay attention to detail. Well, having done that, then even before I've looked at their records, I take a routine history, a medical and gynecologic and fertility issue from the woman and then from the partner, whatever he or she has had done to them, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then it's now more than an hour, hour and a half, then I look at the records. And before I look at the records, I explain to them that I've now know why they're there. I know their medical histories, and usually they don't have any comorbidities, bad things in their histories, which abnormalities which prevent pregnancy altogether. And I say, now I'm going to look at your records to see if you've had the tests that I would have done with your situation. Do you follow?
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you've had the test, wasn't it recent? Because test results fluctuate. So if it was more than, say, 6 months ago, we repeat it. Otherwise, I don't have to be repetitive. That's why when I get the histories, I want good chronology. then I say, if you've had these tests, am I satisfied? Or most times, I have to tell them, I have to populate them further, do further testing. That's before we actually talk about the tests.
Okay.
What I do is, I'm rather naughty because when I go to the test results, I say, "Oh, I see. Yes, you've had a prolactin done. Do you know what prolactin is?" And these often highly intelligent professional people, or not professional, but people are intelligent. They're looking for help. Do you know what it is? No, I don't know. Do you know what an antiphospholipid, you've had anticardiolipin, do you know what that is? Do you know what a thyroid level is? No. I say, don't worry about failing a test. It's a multiple choice. But then when I start, once I've seen what they've had and I feel I have to populate it further, I then say to them, you know, you've been through a lot, and just from what I've learned and my interest in mind-body medicine, you can't give a reason for it, but I feel it helps if people know why they're having a test.
Absolutely.
It just helps. I say, would you like now? Otherwise, in the next 10 minutes, we'll be done. I'll give the nurses the tests that I feel you need. And invariably, no exception, patients say, "Oh, yes, please, we'd like to know why we had the test." I said, you're going and you're having all these tests and you're highly intelligent. You wouldn't do this in your normal life, but you just accept it. And it helps if you know why you're having it, so you can understand. It also leads you to understand this isn't your fault. So this infertility is a disease like any other disease. You've got to investigate and treat it. It doesn't have to happen. And then I tell them, well, and I also, you know, intergenerational aspects have to be taken into account. By that I mean, you know, baby boomers, they've finished school and their mission is to go to college, get a job, stick to that job, save money for their children, their grandchildren. But when you start getting subsequent generations, like millennials, if you look at it, millennials are a group which like to have things explained to them. So, you know, people, a lot of them are millennials or Generation X and so on, they need explanations. And they, well, the patients jump at it. They want to know. And then what I do is I outline the basic tests, see the ones they've had done or haven't had done. And then after I've done those, I go into the immune tests. I build up to it and explain it.
Well,
then we do the bloods and we do the tests if they want to have them.
But I like that it is an important to explain. It's empowering. They become
Absolutely.
Part of that process. I mean, I do
yes.
that in my practice. I, you know, people come in and for a variety of reasons and many with fertility, I explain every supplement. I explain why we're looking at diet, I explain why we need to do a more
yes.
in-depth thyroid panel. So, you know this, but a lot of times, they'll just check the TSH. Well, that's like looking at the front door of a house and saying, "I'm going to buy this house," but nobody's paid any attention to TPOs and antibodies. And I've actually seen that be a tremendous. I had one woman, she had quote unquote unexplained infertility for 7 years, finally got pregnant with IVF. And I kept insisting, please get your antibodies and TPOs tested. I'm editing a lot out. I sent her to a fabulous thyroid endocrinologist down here, Brittany Henderson. She's somebody who's amazing. Anyway, she discovered that she had Graves. And,
yes, good
and,
for you.
You know, so that is part of, you know, I want to make sure, and we'll go into this, that they look at MTHFR issues.
Okay, yeah.
And I want and clotting, and I'd love to go, you to go into this.
Okay, you know, I just want to stop you there, because good. You see Graves, TPO, antithyroid, that you're mentioning.
Yes.
That's not, in many cases that's not been done, not point the finger at anyone, because people do it, but in many cases that's not been done, and just to make you feel good, I've got a paper in preparation on treating patients with, you know, Hashimoto's and or who've just got TPO and the antithyroid antibodies without Hashimoto's. Mm-hmm. And I've got a lot of cases over the years, and we're doing this sequentially, and we're analyzing it to see our results. I'll give you an example. I think there's a big problem, because patients have low thyroid, or they've got TPO, they've got Hashimoto's, mm-hmm. which doesn't have many symptoms, by the way. You just feel a bit tired, maybe. And the doctors, a lot of the times, the current treatment is to give them levothyroxine, which is Synthroid, mm-hmm. and stabilize their TSH, their thyroid, circulating thyroid level. And they... In fertility, that doesn't show all that much improvement, and the reason is it's an antibody TPO and antibodies, mm-hmm. so autoantibodies. So we give them autoimmune directed treatment.
And do you know what part of that is?
That's been explored in the past, mm-hmm. a little bit, but it's not accepted as the standard of treatment. The standard of treatment currently for those patients, and there's just been a huge study in the New England Journal, is to give them levothyroxine. We had rounds on it recently, and the expert who came talk, levothyroxine, but he didn't show any improvement in their results on growth retardation and so on. It's because it's autoimmune.
Well, also autoimmune, you know, when you're looking at...
Autoimmune is immunology.
Yes, and also you have to... I look at with autoimmune issues, again, you know, genetic predisposition, you know, right, weak link in the chain, but looking at diet, looking at selenium... You know, looking at variety of nutrients that are necessary for proper thyroid function, and mm-hmm. doing a lot of detox and environmental work. I had a Japanese teacher, Kiko Matsumoto. This is going back like 28 years, and she would say, "Your thyroid is the dumping ground for garbage." And a lot of times in working, and I myself have had thyroid TPOs and antibodies. I know the thyroid journey. So for...
You know, yeah, go ahead.
No, so I just know that it's incredibly important, anti-inflammatory diet, and I keep going back to it, environmental factors, pesticides, plastics, all that stuff, celiac, okay. I see that. But anyway, continue. I wanted to interject that because that's part of it. It's a big piece.
Yeah, no, you know what they've just shown, it's as an early view article, is mm-hmm. that, and this makes me think a lot about, you know, how important vitamin D is.
Oh, gosh.
And that's because it's anti-inflammatory. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, like if you've got endometriosis, you've got inflammation, inflammatory antibodies, if your CRP, which is a test for reaction to body inflammation, is raised, when you go in the sun, your vitamin D goes up, and God or whatever you believe, nature never does anything without a reason. Mm-hmm. And the reason is because it's been shown to be so important in attacking inflammation, which helps with fertility, which helps with cardiac disease, because mm-hmm. CRP is also a cardiac test. But they've mm-hmm. just shown, and this to me is very interesting, that vitamin D has a role in thyroid function. Mm-hmm. And we often see, especially in New York, where a lot of women have low mm-hmm. vitamin D's, patients come in who've been to a doctor, and a lot of them come in and have been given Synthroid mm-hmm. because their TSH was a little high, meaning they're a little short of thyroid hormone, mm-hmm. and they don't have antibodies, and I think it's made me happy because he has a cause. It might be because their vitamin D is so low, because these are women with marginally hypothyroid and there are no antibodies. Why is it happening? And it's because it could be just, and this is just very interesting, it's brand new. The endocrinologist I work with was very excited, and I told him I've just got this immunology article from the American Society of Reproductive Immunology. Mm-hmm. They've shown it. And, you know, this might be why we see these women with just low thyroids on 50 micrograms or 25 micrograms of Synthroid, very low dose. But, you know, there are a lot of other things.
But there are, and you know what's interesting,
that's
Jonathan?
That's just one thing. I mean, yeah. That's one of my...
Well, some
okay.
of the.
Well, I don't give you a list of tests.
No,
but if you
no,
need
I think
to know
it's,
more about tests, I can tell you.
Yes, and just to let you know, some of the best D research comes from Dr. Carol Wagner here at MUSC for women and pregnancy.
Yes.
So she really wants women to be aiming between, I think, I don't know, 50 and. I like women between 50 and 70 or 80. But what is interesting, I feel with a lot of these fertility issues and immunological issues, it's not just one thing. It's a synergistic cluster of stuff. Low
okay.
D, low selenium, okay. a trashed microbiome. And so,
okay.
yeah.
Okay. Now, I just want to say that we sometimes said immunology conference and over a beer at the end of the day, we discussed there's not going to be one treatment
right.
for pregnancy loss or for
yeah.
recurrent failed IVF.
Mm-hmm.
It's multifactorial.
Yes, absolutely.
When you look at, okay, so I do these investigations, I do mm-hmm. a lot of tests, and that's the point. You've got to test. Otherwise, mm-hmm. you're not explained. And when, for example, when you find someone who's got anti-thyroid antibodies, because
mm-hmm.
we always test those, of course.
Right.
I don't go through, I haven't done the basic test, but say we're mm-hmm. doing the immune test and they've got anti-thyroid antibodies. But I also do, we look at other immune parameters, other autoantibodies, other cytokines, which are, well, this is all immune stuff, mm-hmm. and bodies mm-hmm. terms. You seldom, in fact, you never find just one parameter. They all might have the same treatment. They might be all autoimmune, but you might find things which are not autoimmune. There are other immune things, not necessarily autoimmune. They can be alloimmune, other things. But there's never just one thing. And you see, you can't just say, well, the patient doesn't have anti-thyroid antibodies, so it's not immune, because you also have to do the ANA. And the rheumatoid factor and mm-hmm. the double-stranded DNA, because people, women and men, can have autoantibodies. And sometimes it acts against you and sometimes it doesn't. And when I do an autoimmune test, if we find anti-thyroid antibodies or lupus antibodies, even though they don't have it clinically, you have to treat them if they're having pregnancy problems, because autoimmune findings are common in women with recurrent pregnancy loss or implantation failure where they don't get pregnant. So whether it's, I'm trying to make a point, whether it's the lupus antibodies or the antithyroid or the ANA or the double strand, we do quite a few of the more common autoimmune factors, because you don't want them to be unexplained. They might not have antithyroid, but they might have lupus antibodies.
Mm-hmm.
And but I'll also make a point, and this is important, to reassure them that if we find autoantibodies, say, to lupus, and they don't have lupus, they don't have to worry. They're not going to get lupus in the future. Once they've had their child or they've decided not to pursue things, they don't have to worry about it. It's the other way around. Of course, if they have clinical lupus, then they will have antibodies. But if they have autoantibodies, it doesn't mean they're going to get the disease. And I always tell patients, especially when you're doing some of these more sophisticated tests, immune tests, that nothing we find is going to affect their general health, that you're going to find something terrible, like they've got some awful disease. So they must feel comfortable. Because truly, there is the tests we do, if hypothetically, which means make believe, and when I once said that to a patient, if hypothetically you didn't want a child, right? Mm-hmm. Then you can throw all these results away. And then I said that, she started crying. She said, I do want a child. That's how people are suffering, you know. Mm-hmm. Just if hypothetically I didn't want a child, all these test results can be trashed. Of course, lifestyle factors, which are important, people should always adhere to. And that's also something we discussed. But, you know, I'm just, in the time available, we couldn't go through all the tests we do. But if you want to use some of them, I can, you know.
Yeah, I do. Actually, I would love, could you kind of walk us through a client that you've worked with and the treatment and the outcome so people can get an understanding of, you know, what all these tests lead to and what the protocol would be to help this couple, this woman, to have a child.
Yeah, well, the protocols are so varied. There's no mm-hmm. fixed protocol.
I know.
it depends on the individual's history and findings. But essentially, what I do is I first do the basic tests like cultures, ureaplasm and mycoplasma. Those are not. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Those are not STDs. This is all part of the micro and the bacteria that you find in the vagina, which cause inflammation, which can interfere with pregnancy, and it's a known cause of not succeeding. You don't have to treat it unless you're trying to have a baby. It's not an STD. But it makes the vaginal and uterine environment inflammatory. That's what we're talking about, inflammatory mm-hmm, antibodies. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then you also have to – I also check the male because – you know, even if they've got embryos transfer or whether they just do it on their own, if the male's got ureaplasma, for example, in his seminal fluid, prostatic fluid, that has to be treated as well, because when they have intercourse, even though it's not an STD, it does go backwards and forwards between the couple. And I also do something, do a second culture, another Q-tip, to look for any other bacteria, because if the bacteria in the seminal fluid or in the vagina, which shouldn't be there, like you find odd bacteria,
right?
Should you treat it? I think you should, because there's something called chronic endometritis, which has become very important in the work of patients, particularly if they fail chromosomally normal IVF. And we don't know where the inflammation of the bacteria have come from. And then I do some tests on the male. I look at the sperm a bit more carefully. It just depends on the history.
Look at fragmentation. These tests that you're doing, are these tests that are not
these are
normally?
Just the basic.
Yeah, but are these basic tests?
No, people do them, but I want.
Oh, okay.
We make sure they've done them.
Okay.
And then, you know, then we check in the woman, the thyroid, the prolactin, mm-hmm. the autoimmune findings. We check for, depending on the history, for polycystic ovary syndrome. Right. That is found in fairly high percentage of people who fail IVF or repeatedly miscarry.
Right.
And no, the original description of polycystic ovarian syndrome, where they had to be obese, hairy, and acne, and miscarriage, doesn't.
Not the case in my practice.
That's not the case. You've got to look for it. No. And then, you know, we do things like, I don't know if you want to know, checking for insulin resistance.
Yes.
Seeing, we check and we do their vitamin D level, and we check them for the CRP, which is another autoimmune. Then we do a whole panel of what are known there as thrombophilias, hereditary thrombophilias. These are factors that interfere with blood flow to the implanting embryo.
Mm-hmm.
Then after that, we start doing immune testing. And immunology really means your immune system protects you from things from outside. That's mm-hmm. what it does. You know, if you eat a salad and someone hasn't washed their hands, and the food goes down the intestine, the immune cells in the wall of the intestine recognize something foreign, just like a fireman, sprout with foam or antibody, and they're destroyed. Mm-hmm. It's just incredible. And every lining in men and women, whether it's vagina, cervix, uterus, in men and women, urethra, rectum, bladder wall, eyes, nose, ears, mouth, skin, have immune cells. Right. And immunology is very important. an immune cell is like a little pig fire extinguisher, which produces foamal antibodies, so it protects you. And then we look at the immune cells, and we look at, like, people have heard of natural killer cells. Your immune cells are your white blood cells. They're about 60 or 80 kinds. And we do a panel of those, and then we look at very inflammatory antibodies as opposed to less inflammatory ones. We look at immune responses between the couple. We look at factors that control the intensity of immune responses, and we look at
I have a question.
Go on.
What do you mean, because I see immune responses between the couple. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, well...
Or tie it in it after you finish this?
You see, I know I'm becoming too technical, I'll be a little easier. You know, when the person gets pregnant, mm-hmm. when a woman conceives, she's accepting, it's like having a semi-transplant, the embryo, mm-hmm. half more or less comes from the husband. And she has to respond appropriately to his makeup, his genes and his chromosomes, and not reject them. Because if you think about it, a husband can make a woman pregnant, but he can't give her a baby, but he can't give her a kidney transplant or a skin graft. They'll be rejected. And so immune adaptation is very important. And there are some tests we look at to see how the woman's responding. So, you know, there's a lot that you can't do, but you can find things. There are more and more things that are being discussed now, but I don't do giving practical esoteric things. Mm-hmm. So we look at certain genes to see if they're sharing them perhaps and so on, because that helps us. We can't manipulate them at this stage, but it helps to explain them why it's taken them a long time to have a child. And then the one other important thing that I just want to mention, mm-hmm. because when you go through like anatomic causes, genetic, endocrine, infections and so on, antiphospholipid antibodies are important. That's an important test. The REs do it as well. These are antiphospholipid antibodies are actually autoantibodies which interfere with blood flow to an embryo. So they cut off the blood flow mm-hmm. to an embryo, and they're very important to test for, particularly when people get pregnant and then the fetal heart disappears or the embryo stops growing. So, you know, there's a whole slew of, I just want to, not to remember anything, just to mm-hmm. say that you've got to do the investigations.
Yes.
And then we give a protocol depending on what we found. And we also discuss lifestyle issues.
Yeah, so do you in your practice feel that, well, I do.
And I'm sorry I've been a bit too technical.
Oh, that's okay.
But I'm just
no, it's...
Are,
it's
to show you there are immune causes. And
I want to say something on your behalf. I've referred clients to Jonathan for over 15 years. And on my end, you know, as I've said, I look at diet, I look at lifestyle, look at thyroid and detoxification, all this stuff. Yeah. And when I can't find that and I know there's a missing piece, these are the people I send to you. And you've helped so many women. So you might be technical. I think this technical information is incredibly important. Yeah. But here's the beauty, Jonathan. You've helped thousands of women go on to have babies, right?
Yeah.
No, really.
Yeah, a lot. Yeah.
No, but it's true.
We don't always succeed. Only God can guarantee an
right.
outcome.
Right, but you get...
But we treat, yes.
Yes.
We find a lot, and we've got... I know my success rate. I'm not going to give it to you. I don't want to get into trouble mm-hmm. if someone says, no, it's less or it's more or something like that. But we're showing benefits. Mm-hmm. And the benefit we're showing... is making sure that they've had the basic test. Now, a lot of mm-hmm. patients come out, they've never had their antithyroid antibodies tested. Mm-hmm. A lot of them haven't been cultured. Mm-hmm. You understand? A lot of them haven't their vitamin D checked.
I know, that's what I always write down. Yeah.
You've got to do the basic
investigate.
Work. You've got to make sure they've been done. Okay, mm-hmm. so a lot of times they haven't been done, but times they've been done as well. But that doesn't mean they've had no tests. But you see, the tests that get done for fertility are standard, which are important, like a sperm count, check that the woman's ovulating, a hysterosalpingogram to see that the tubes are open, and then a saline or water ultrasound called a sonohistogram, where you squirt fluid into the endometrial cavity before you put the wand in the vagina with a transvaginal ultrasound to see there's no polyp or septum in the uterine cavity or scarring, which has to be correct. The RE's do that all the time, which is very important.
Yes.
But when they don't succeed, you've got to go further. And that's including some of the basics you've mentioned, and then the immune test. Now, because it's relatively new, it's not out there. And people are learning. And I know, as I do, sometimes I do, well, I always do long reports to their doctor, a narrative. And I see now that they, I'm getting patients from the REs who've treated their patients with Lovenox, you know, low molecular weight heparin. And then they still haven't succeeded. We look further, but they
that's
are.
That's a blood. That's for women that have clotting. So if they may not know what that issues, is, it's for clotting factor issues.
You see, it used to be believed that when a woman has an early miscarriage, whether it's from IVF or spontaneously or from Clomid, that it's a blood flow issue. It's always that. But in fact, we're finding the very early ones are in fact have an immune basis. The later ones, towards the end of the first trimester, 10, 12 weeks, or in the second trimester, are usually the blood flow issues, because physiologically, it's only around about 10 weeks that the maternal blood flow contribution to the early placenta occurs. You understand what I'm saying? So that makes sense that why maybe the blood clot issue, the antiphospholipid antibodies, are not that relevant to the sort of loss that occurs sooner, like a chemical pregnancy or a very early loss. Should I explain what a chemical, what a miscarriage is and what a chemical pregnancy
please,
is?
Yeah, please, please do.
Is that old news?
No, I please do.
Okay. A miscarriage is the loss of a pregnancy before 20 weeks, once it's established, or a baby weighing 1 pound. That would be classified as miscarriage. After that, it's a stillbirth or growth retarded or et cetera. A chemical pregnancy is a pregnancy where it's established. In other words, the woman has an HCG level, which is a pregnancy hormone level that can be measured. And yet it doesn't get far enough, doesn't progress far enough to see anything on ultrasound. That's a chemical pregnancy. And just incidentally, an early miscarriage, a chemical pregnancy, where there's nothing yet, you're pregnant but nothing's been seen on ultrasound, is regarded as a miscarriage, as well as an ectopic pregnancy, where a pregnancy develops outside the uterus, in the tubes or in any other part, is also regarded as a miscarriage by the American Society of Reproductive Immunology. So if you've had, if you, for example, you get investigated, usually it was said after three, you qualify after three miscarriages. But now the new guidelines are after two miscarriages, you qualify for investigation and treatment, because the reason being that the recurrence rate of a miscarriage after you've had two or three is almost the same, around about 33% or something like that. So now you investigate two miscarriages. We also investigate after one miscarriage, if the patient miscarried, for example, and they've had a chromosomally normal embryo transferred. And we also will investigate one miscarriage if it's an advanced miscarriage, a second trimester after 12 weeks or near to 12 weeks, or if the woman's older in fertility terms, like middle 30s or later early 40s and so on. So you don't have to wait to recurrently miscarry before you investigate, or recurrently fail IVF before you miscarry it. We usually investigate IVF after a failed IVF, after two failed IVFs. But if even the first one had a normal embryo transferred, chromosomally normal, had been tested, it's called PGS.
Right.
Then you should be investigated. Because now you can't say, oh, well, it's the embryo. It wasn't normal.
I found that very helpful. That was really good.
The indications for being invested, can you believe patients who say, well, I've only had two miscarriages. The doctor said I must come back again. If you don't succeed next time, then we'll do it.
Okay,
but that's a little cruel if you appreciate the agony and what a mission it is for people to when they can't get pregnant. It is so gut-wrenching.
Well, yes, and I had sent you somebody.
And recently. No one knows it more than you, Meg.
Well, I sent you.
You see these patients.
I know it's hard, and I sent you someone recently. I mean, I've sent you people that have had four or five miscarriages, and
absolutely,
they were like 3, 4, or 5 months along.
But, you know, also I have patients, maybe not all out in New York, who we recommend treatment to. And I've had occasions where their doctor said to me, Ari, and I mean, I think it's unreal, said, if you do that treatment, I'm not treating you. You know,
I've heard
it's heartbreaking because a lot of it is, I mean, it is science. It's a very scientific.
So I have a question. Do you work with clients that are out of state?
You know, we get clients out of state. We get clients from overseas. You know, I don't encourage it for the reason I've just given you. Because,
Well, I'm sending you someone.
I don't say anything. I don't get myself in trouble. But people are sometimes reluctant not to accept anything that's not in their, you know, something that they're not familiar with. Because, you know, things change very slowly. And in medicine, things change very slowly.
Mm-hmm.
But let me give you some nice information.
Okay. We have a few. We have a little time. Yes, I would love that.
Just let me tell you this. Because, you know, about lifestyle. Well, you know, you tell your patient, cut down the alcohol, cut down the coffee, cut down your gluten. But they've just proven immunologically at a conference of the European Society of Reproductive Immunology in Athens, Greece, about 5 weeks ago. They had a very academic, and they had some nutritionists presenting one Sunday afternoon spoke about diets, and they've shown that a Mediterranean diet reduces inflammatory cytokines. They actually name them. So there's a lot of basic immunologic research that has been done with a Mediterranean diet. You know, little red meat, as you know, fish, fruit, vegetable, nuts, seeds. But the big thing was to cook your food with olive oil.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really beneficial. And I know you talk gluten and everything. I mean, it's all tied up with that. But now there's all this hardcore proof.
I do, and I think it's pretty much of a Mediterranean diet. My philosophy is that 70% of the plate is plant-based, and the other 30% is lean protein, wild-caught fish. I do think beef is
absolutely
good, grass-fed, and with nuts and oil. It's a whole food diet.
Absolutely.
And it's funny because I have quite a few, women that have been vegetarian, and I've gotten them to bring protein into their world of, meat and fish, because I think it's quite important to have all those branched chain amino acids and various amino acids to support a healthy pregnancy. But people don't eat vegetables, and they don't, we eat so much processed food. So I agree. Mediterranean diet is incredible.
Incredible.
That's why I follow principles of Chinese medicine.
It's good for general health anyway.
Oh, totally.
You know? I just want to
say, Italian.
Okay. You know, I'm coming around for a meal, but I just want to say something.
Yes.
That I've tried to I've spoken a lot, and maybe I was giving too much technical information, but because I didn't want to, you know, if you want to just know the causes and you say, okay, the genetic causes, anatomic causes, endocrine causes, or I mean, it's a little, not boring, but it's, you're just rehashing a lot of stuff. I've tried to go a little bit for the new stuff, but, you know, anatomic causes are important, you know, and the ORIs are very good.
Yes, and they're good at figuring that out. Yeah, but
they find a septum in the uterus, and you remove it, you get great results.
Yes.
You know, so there are the basic tests, and it's not all immune, but immune when people fail and they unexplained, it's, you've got to have basic testing insured and immune testing.
Well, I would like to say that this. Do you know Dr. Fazano up at Mass General? He is a pediatric gastroenterologist and researcher, and he's done a lot in the area of celiac. And he feels with a lot of autoimmune disease, the three factors to look at: genetic predisposition, environmental triggers, the ones we discussed, antibiotics, bacteria, you know, standard American diet, and then intestinal permeability. So I say to you, with this immune stuff that is going on that you see, I really feel a big chunk of it is that we also have to look at lifestyle, diet, and environmental factors.
And there's a lot of research, and it's led by Dr. Gregor Reed. He's from the Canadian Research Institute in Ontario, to show the importance of probiotics. Even the general immunology journals, the medical ones, talk about the importance of probiotics, you know, because they produce microvesicles. And we put all our patients onto probiotics. We encourage it to do it because they've been shown to be beneficial for a lot of things, but for pregnancy.
Yeah, and I agree, and I try to put most of my women on a vaginal probiotic or one that's specific to the microbiome of the vagina, and also for the gut. So I put people on a couple of probiotics. I totally agree with you, particularly when I see a history of UTIs and vaginal infections and some of the things that you mentioned about bacteria. Jonathan, thank you again.
It's a pleasure.
You really shed such beautiful light into an area that can be very confusing for people. And I think one point that you really shot home is that people need to, you know, understand why they're being tested for certain things and maybe have their doctors explain what they're doing so they can feel empowered and part of the process and not just at the mercy of their reproductive endocrinologist. And that's what I love about you, is you really explain in detail. And I think that really helps and encourages couples when they're trying again to have a successful pregnancy.
Yeah, there's a book that's just come out on aging from Harvard called Lifespan. It's to do with staying healthy and prolonging your life and maybe reversing aging. It's going to become a bestseller. And
beautiful.
He talks about this, but he's a geneticist, the genes. Mm-hmm. But he sees his aging is a disease, like anything else.
Yeah.
And I think that reproductive problems can be treated, and
absolutely,
they must be treated.
Well,
you've got to look at it.
It's like I always say this to women, you are like your garden, and how are you tending your garden? How are you fertilizing your soil, and how are you taking, what are the nutrients in the soil that allows that garden to thrive?
Yeah.
So Dr. Scheer, Jonathan, thank you again.
Okay, please.
And
do me. Thank you.
We will speak soon. Many blessings to you.
Okay, you too.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
That was an amazing podcast today. I'm so glad that I had Dr. Jonathan Scheer on the show. He is an incredible detective, and he's helped, again, so many women and so many couples. And if you didn't check out last podcast episode, I've been getting incredible feedback on why women are not having sex, what's going on in the bedroom. And please check that out. I had such a good time with my guest, Alina McClerklin. She is a sex therapist up in DC. Great, great episode, because you want to have good sex to have healthy, sexy babies. So that's an important part of the picture. And the next episode, really excited. It's about sobriety. And I have two amazing guests on the show. My friend Tim O'Ellis from New York, incredible musician, years ago produced a CD for me, and consider a dear friend, and his journey is extraordinary. And we will have a guest from down here. Her name is Jill, and Jill's last name is escaping me, and she also has been sober for a little over 4 years, worked on in Silicon Valley, moved down here to Charleston, and changed her life. Good podcast. I want to thank everyone, Dave, for listening in. If you like this show, please, you know, give a thumbs up. Always appreciate the reviews, and subscribe on iTunes or Spotify. And until next time, take good care, eat your veggies, drink a lot of water, and take your probiotics. Have a good one.